some sauce, fire up the Barbie. Len and Jeff, welcome you. Here's baseball and Barbie.
From the studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York, this is episode number, I can't believe it, 172 of Baseball and BBQ, where the BBQ stands for?
Bar-ba-Q. That's barbecue.
I'm Jeff the Old Coot Cohen, along with Leonard Hollywood Averman. We welcome you back to our program, Leonard!
172, Jeff, you can't believe it. I can't believe it, but it's happening. It's the weeks, they fly by.
Yes, they do.
Somebody contacted me and they wanted to have an episode. Oh, no, I know what it was. It was our interview with Mackie Sasser. Uh-huh. Yeah, they posted something on Facebook. That's what it was.
Okay.
And I was like, well, we had Mackie Sasser. Why don't we put that up there? And it seemed like we just had him. Episode 100.
Wow.
Was Mackie Sasser.
Mackie Sasser, major league catcher. But you know who's on this episode? A major league pitcher.
Yes. You know why I'm drawing a semi-blank?
Why?
Because I wasn't there with you.
That's right. You were on assignment.
Yes, I was.
Well, before we tell everybody who he is, don't you have something to tell us?
I do. Let me take care of this and tell you guys that BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from the NFL playoffs to pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, and much more. You will always find the latest odds, team matchup information, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sports or game imaginable. BetOnline is truly the latest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50%, that's right, 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure you use promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts.
Did you say NFL playoffs?
Yes, I did.
You know there's only one game left.
Yes. Well, you know what? We need new copy. That's what we need. So,
all right. So who's all right? Gonna be, yes. So,
all right. So bet us, the Super Bowl. All right.
We have with us today on our show, who you did not interview, but I did. It's former Major League pitcher Andy Benes. And you were on assignment. You were out of the country.
I was out of the country, but filling in admirably for me while I was gone was Bill Chuck.
Yes.
And Jeff, I was a little nervous when I heard that Bill Chuck was going to fill in for me. I was afraid that maybe when I got back, you might say, Hollywood who?
But Leonard, you heard the interview. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I did. I did. And I got the opportunity to listen to it as a fan, so not an interview that we did and then I listened to. So it was kind of nice to listen to it first time.
Yeah.
And hear it as the listeners of the show will hear it for the first time.
Yeah.
Really good. You and Bill Chuck, great team. Andy Benes, great interview. And then, Jeff, you know, we've got a second guest, too.
We do. All the way from the state of Arkansas.
Yeah. He is a huge Razorbacks fan.
Yes.
But I think a bigger barbecue fan.
I think so, too.
And his name is Galen Powell.
Of Old Grunt BBQ.
Yes. And Old Grunt.
Yeah.
Old Coot, old Grunt. Yeah. I'm sensing a theme there.
So, Leonard, you know, baseball's right around the corner, pitches and catches.
You can't wait. Can't wait, Jeff.
Yeah. But you know what else is happening this season? It's the World Baseball Classic.
Oh, please. Please. Jeff, I don't know if we're going to get people that are going to be upset with my opinion or agree with my opinion, but I'm going to give my opinion on that.
Okay, go ahead.
The World Baseball Classic. I love baseball and I love anything done to promote it, but I just find it's a made up tournament. I don't like when these teams just form for this for a few weeks. You've got guys who are on major league rosters. They should be in spring training. And now their spring training is basically in the World Baseball Classic. That's where they're, you know, these guys haven't played. And now their first games and their first practices and all that are going to be with these teams. And as a team, I would be a little leery to have my players leave to go to this World Baseball Classic.
Well, I tell you, I'm looking over some of the teams, and the Dominican Republic is going to be hard to beat. Oh, my God. You want to hear this lineup?
The
projected lineup is Julio Rodriguez, Jose Ramirez, Juan Soto, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Rafael Devers, Manny Machado, Starling Marte, Jeremy Pena, and Gary Sanchez. Now, I will say Starling Marte is probably not going to play because he is coming back from an injury. So I don't think he'll be there. But that is one hell of a projected lineup. Only yes. One non-major leaguer. Gary Sanchez is not a major leaguer.
Which is another, yeah.
Well, he's not. He's a free agent.
No, you're right. But
he's not on semantics, I know. But he is not a major leaguer. He's not on a major league team.
No, and we don't know what's going to happen with him. Because his
he'll be playing for Dominican.
Yeah. Can a player that was suspended from baseball, Fernando Tatis, can he play in this classic?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know.
Who puts on this World Baseball Classic? Is it Major League Baseball?
Major League Baseball.
And he's suspended by Major League Baseball.
Until May something, I think.
Yeah. And you didn't read his name on the roster.
Well, I don't know what team he would play for.
It
might be Venezuela. It might be Puerto. Yeah, I don't
right.
know.
And also,
venture to guess.
Yeah, and who knows if he made the choice not to play or he can't play. So I don't. Anyway, I'm not going to rant about it because you know I can't rant. But I'm just not a huge fan of this. I think if you're going to have this kind of tournament, have it at the end of the season.
I will say a quick Google search says. Okay. Fernando Tatis would have been on the Dominican Republic team.
Okay, but we don't know if he's choosing not to play.
He is not allowed to play.
He's not.
He's okay. Ineligible.
Okay. Jeff, should this tournament be at the beginning of the season when they should be in spring training? Or is it better if they had it at the end of the season?
Preferably I have it at the end of the season just because, you know, if someone gets hurt, then you have time to recover. Here, mm-hmm. at the beginning of the season, when it gets hurt, you're into the season.
Right. So. And also at the end of the season, you've played a whole season. You're in shape.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, at the same time, you might actually be ready to end the season, and to play extra games might not be great, but at least you're in baseball shape.
Yep.
Anyway, it is what it is. I'll watch it.
You know, our first guest, Andy Bennett, he did play for the Olympic team in baseball.
Yeah, but the Olympics are different.
Yes.
Than the World Baseball Classic.
Speak of Andy Bennett, let's get right to him. We have with us today on Baseball and BBQ a pitcher who had a 14-year career with four teams. He was the number one overall pick of the San Diego Padres in the 1988 Major League Draft. Named to the All-Star team in 1993, led the National League in strikeouts in 1994. He has the distinction of being a teammate with his brother, not once, but twice. And recently, he's been named to the Missouri Valley Conference Hall of Fame class of 2023. Today, he runs a youth baseball program in the St. Louis area. Welcome to Baseball and BBQ, Andy Bennis.
How you doing, guys?
And with me today is Bill Chuck, who is pinch hitting for Leonard Aberman, who's on
On assignment.
Yeah.
So thank you, Andy, for joining us. And Bill, I will let you lead off.
Well, I have to tell you something, Andy. I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I knew of you and I watched you pitch. But the more I looked into you, the more fascinated I was with all the things that went on in your career. You had an amazing number of things that went on. Okay, before I ask you what the highlight is, let me just say that you pitched in the All-Star game and you pitched in the postseason. And let's see, you pitched the first regular season game for the Diamondbacks. Mm-hmm. So many of these things, but what for you is the memory that you carry with you most from your years in the bigs or before?
Oh, wow. That's a tough question. I just had the privilege of doing an awful lot in baseball. I grew up loving baseball. I grew up in Southern Indiana and the same town as Don Mattingly and Bob Greasy. And so...
And just so that everybody knows, that's
Southern Indiana. So they call me a Hoosier, and I'm like, yeah. And I guess in Missouri, it means something different than in Indiana. But I go with the Indiana meaning. But had the chance to play in college. I really wanted to play more than one sport in college. And so football was a sport that I love playing. I love basketball the most, but I wanted to play Division I baseball, and the University of Evansville gave me the opportunity to play Division II football and Division I baseball. And, you know, I ended up being kind of out of nowhere the first pick in the draft. Baseball wasn't my best sport until probably my junior year in college. I love basketball and football. My wife and I got married my sophomore year in college. I was a pre-med undergrad with biology and chemistry and stuff. And so I was just doing okay in baseball. And then between my sophomore and junior year, I started throwing a little bit harder. I finally hit 90 for the first time, but I was also young for my grade. So I could have been a year behind. And then in the spring, my second or third start, I'm throwing 101. And so I kind of just burst onto the scene, and I didn't have it wasn't like I was some protege, you know, like Bryce Harper or, you know, where the expectation or Griffey, where it was just the expectation was so high. It just kind of happened quick for me. And I say my wife, because we'd been married for a year. And I guess as an amateur, you ask what were some highlights. Playing on the U.S. Olympic team was incredible.
I can tell already that you're very modest in the way you're presenting, but I've got to tell you, if you don't want to brag about you, we'll do it for you. Okay.
People ask me, I'm like, yeah, I won a gold medal, and they'll kind of look at me and they're like, well, what did you do? I'm like, well, I was in the 100-meter dash and beat Carl Lewis. I mean, what do you mean? What did I do?
Okay, you win on the bragging. Okay.
Yeah, so Carl Lewis was in that Olympic Games, and I was more enamored with him than baseball. But it was really cool to represent your country and to stand on that medal stand and have one of those Korean girls put that medal on you and give you some flowers was unbelievable and something I'll never forget. And I tell people we live in the greatest country in the world, and I've been to a lot of different countries, had the privilege to go to a lot of different countries for baseball, and also through, we have two children from Russia and one from the Ukraine, in addition to our four biological kids, and this country is amazing, and so to stand there and represent the USA was incredible.
You have six children and six grandchildren.
We have seven kids. We have four adopted or four biological kids, 34, 29, 28, 27. And our oldest son was born 2 months after the Olympic Games. So wow. We'd been married for a year and a half. And so we got home and had a little baby, but our younger three are nine.
I think you should refer to it as we had our gold medal baby.
We did. Yeah, it was quite a treat coming home from the Olympic Games and then having a baby. And then we've adopted three, one from a girl from the Ukraine just 5 years ago. She was 14 when she came over here. And then we adopted a boy and a girl 13 and 12 years ago, and they're 16 and 13. So we have a big family of seven grandkids, seven kids, four spouses. There's 20 of us when we all get together. So I'm very blessed.
Very blessed. That's great. You were drafted in 1988, I believe. Yep. And you spent, a couple of months in the minors before being called up? I always like to ask, what was that call-up phone call like?
Well, it was interesting for sure. I actually didn't. I got a knock on the door. I didn't get a phone call. I played on the U.S. team, as we talked about, and then I played three months in AA. I got called up to AAA for a month, and that was in Las Vegas. And my wife and our little guy had just gotten there. We'd moved into an apartment for the first time. We didn't even have a phone hooked up. So our manager had to, I guess it was in a gated community. I don't really remember. He said I had to climb the security fence, find our place, knock on the door. And he said, you're going to San Diego. You're starting in a few days. You're going to need to get your bags. And I think for people, it was so exciting for me. But literally, we get a knock on the door at 7 a.m. He said, you got to get to the stadium, get your stuff packed. You have a flight to San Diego. And my wife is super excited. And she's looking at me like, well, what am I going to do? I have a baby. We just moved into this place. And that's something that most people don't see.
Right.
I got traded from San Diego to Seattle. And we've been in San Diego for 6 years. And I got a call at 8 o'clock at night, and at 8:30 in the morning, I went down, cleaned out my locker, and drove to Anaheim because I wanted to see Randy Johnson pitch, even though I was going to be his teammate for the rest of the year. And my wife was just there at home by herself. And we had a 7-year-old, a 2-year-old, a newborn, and she was pregnant with our fourth. And it was just like, I was gone for 3 months. And it's hard. It's super hard, but for me, getting that knock on the door and going to the big leagues was super fun. My wife and son got down there. My mom and dad flew in for it. And that's a knock that I'll never forget. People that's are probably tremendous. Thinking, well, why didn't they just text you? There weren't any phones like
right,
that.
Right, exactly. Sure. And your first and manager.
I didn't have them. So
Your first manager was Jack McKeon, who, as a side note, I happened to meet a couple months ago at the New York State Baseball Hall of Fame. He was inducted in the New York State Baseball Hall of Fame. What a character he was.
He was quite a character. He drafted me. He was the general manager and the manager for a while. And then he was the manager when I got there, and super good to me. I was blessed. When I got there, their starting rotation, they had Eric Schau, Bruce Hurst, Dennis Rasmussen, Ed Whitson, and all these guys are 30 plus, maybe early 30s, and very established. And they were so good to me. I mean, they did tell me to be quiet, don't tell them how good I was, and that I threw harder than them, and just go out and do my job. But they were so good to me, and I remember that as my career went along. It was you talked about the Diamondbacks. We had so many young guys when for the first year. And just to be able to pour into those guys and try to encourage them, because it's a really hard game. And I was there at 21, just out of college, threw really hard, but that was about it. And I had a lot of learning to do. And that's it's just a really hard level to learn at and to try to develop pitches and all of that. And they were, those guys, the teammates were really good to me. Jack and their staff were really good to me. I had two owners, three general managers, and four managers in 6 years in San Diego. Wow. That's a lot.
But all McDonald's you could eat.
Well, yeah, they didn't tell me. They didn't tell me that. She hadn't been the owner for a while, but I would have taken it for sure.
Yeah.
McDonald's, but.
Well, you learn. So you go to the show and you meet Schau, and Schau is wearing your number 30.
Right.
And so. Did they just assign you number 40?
They did.
And then you wore it with every team in the majors.
I wore it with every team. I was thankful. If you get a number when you get called up with a zero on the end, that's pretty good. And
yeah.
So it's the number they gave me, and I just wore it. I didn't really have, when I got traded to Seattle, nobody was wearing 40 at the time. And then when I signed as a free agent with the Cardinals, La Russa and Dave Duncan and the new ownership group were coming in, and they'd signed me and some other guys, but they also signed Rick Honeycutt, who had been with Tony in Oakland, and he wore 40. And so we were all winter. They were like, well, you know, who am I going to, you know, who's going to get the number? You know, a lot of times the veteran guy gets the number. And La Russa finally told the equipment guy, because our equipment guy is super good guy. And he's like, man, I don't know what to do. I'm like, I'll take another number. I don't care. And La Russa stepped in and said, no, Andy's wearing 40. That's it. We're not talking about any more. And that's it. And then in Arizona, it was obviously a expansion team. And so I got the pick.
Yeah, you grabbed
There were only four of us that had more than like 2 years of major league experience.
And then you had no trouble getting 40 in Seattle.
Right.
Yeah. And then back to St. Louis and then back to St. Louis.
Right.
They kept holding it for you, huh?
They did. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if they gave it away in between the 2 years that I was gone, but I'm thankful that I was able to get it back. And
I mentioned the 30 because we, as Jeff already mentioned, you're now in the Hall of Fame, and Evansville retired your number.
Yeah, they 30. Did a few years ago with Jim Brownlee, and they actually just recently retired Jamie Carroll's number. He played there and then played quite a bit in the big leagues as a infielder and super good guy. So there's three guys that have their – actually four guys, because my younger brother Adam, which you don't know Adam, but he wore number 30 at Evansville too. So he says his number's retired.
So, yeah, you mentioned your brother. You know, obviously Alan pitched in the major leagues. I didn't know about your brother Adam. But your parents must have been so thrilled to see – not only see two boys in the major leagues, but teammates.
Yeah, it was incredible. They people were like, man, your parents must be really athletic, or no athletic background, none. My dad grew up in a farm in northern Indiana. My mom was not athletic. And here they have three boys that are all play professional baseball. My youngest brother played six minor league seasons up to Double A, and he was with the Cardinals. So there was one spring training where in 96, I think, or 97, the three of us were all in the same area. He wasn't in big league camp, but it was really cool. And I think as I look back on it, it was probably a real blessing that my dad didn't know anything about baseball. He would show up, would be very encouraging, but didn't really know. And so I remember the first time I came into Chicago and played, they moved to Chicago from southern Indiana when I was going to college. And so both of my younger brothers grew up on the North Shore. And when we went to Wrigley Field, you know, we get done with the game. I go to meet him in the little restaurant down on the first where they have the families waiting. And he's like, did you realize? And he's talking about the beam structure of the stadium. And I said, yeah, Dad, I noticed that when I come in. You know, it's old and it's been here a long time. I mean, I'm not looking at that type of stuff. But, you know, the baseball was like, hey, good game. Way to go. Proud of you. And that was kind of it.
Well, so, okay. Wait.
I'm from a baseball family at all.
Okay. However, I know when anybody talks to you, they talk about September 6, 2002.
Yeah.
And just so that everybody knows, it was – it was the Andy and Alan show,
right?
Facing each other, just the seventh. Now, you two had faced each other in the minors once. Is that right?
Well, we had that same year. I was rehabbing.
Right.
I had an issue with my knee. I went down and did a rehab assignment, and we faced each other in Iowa because he was in AAA with the Cubs. And then on the sixth, I actually had back-to-back. We both had back-to-back starts against the Cubs and the Cardinals. And he had an extra day. He pitched the day before me in Chicago, and then we faced each other in St. Louis. And so that was super fun. I'm the older brother, so you think, well, you face each other. The Cardinals won, so everything was good. But man, it was really hard for me. Tony, when Al and I were in the same rotation in 96 and 97, he couldn't pitch me behind Alan. Being right-handed, we both threw hard. Alan was more of a sinker slider guy. My ball was straighter and would rise a little bit. And so we weren't similar in that regard, but I would sit and grind over every pitch. And so when he would pitch, I was just emotionally exhausted. It was harder for me to watch him pitch than to go out and pitch. And so he would separate us. So facing him was super fun. And my mom and dad were there. I think they wore Cubs and Cardinals stuff.
From what I understand,
I could pick a side.
Your dad switched hats in between innings.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Whoever was on the mound at the time got to wear the hat. That was the hat of your team, and switched hats between innings. But
yeah, they weren't partial to either one of us. I think they kind of. I always say my mom liked me better, but that was just because I was older.
I think it's because of the Smothers Brothers.
It could be. You never know. But it was super fun. Obviously, our team was really good. We were going to go to the playoffs and had a legit chance to go deep in the playoffs. And the Cubs weren't very good. And so it wasn't – that matchup was not – on paper wasn't very good. But I know I faced him first, and he hit a little soft line drive back to me. And I've watched him take batting practice a lot in my day. And he is super strong, and he can rifle it a long ways. And so – I'd gotten behind in the count, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to be careful here. And he hit a little soft liner to me, and I caught it and let it drop. And I looked at him like, you got to run. Like we were playing wiffle ball, Evansville, Indiana, in the front yard. And then I happened to hit the next inning, and I hit a ball into left field that the left fielder should have caught. And I don't have any idea where, how deep he was playing or if he was even paying attention, but it was a hit. And so I got to first, and I was leading off the third inning. I'm like, hey, I want that ball. I got a ball for my first major league hit. I got the ball for my first major league home run and some other balls, shutouts. I'm like, give me that ball. And so, you know, kind of made fun of it. Well, I come up to bat again in the third inning, and they had made a few errors, and it was super hard on me. I'm competing in a game, but that's my younger brother. And so I literally said, when I'm walking up there, I'm swinging at the first pitch. I'm just going to throw my bat at it and just put a ball in play, get the inning over with. I think we'd scored five, six runs, and only a few of them were earned, I think.
Yeah, it was.
I just threw my bat at it.
And actually, your brother was pulled. And then who was it? I'm trying to think. Somebody came in and
gave up the rest.
Yeah, I mean, inherited runners,
yeah,
which makes me crazy.
Well, I literally threw my bat at it.
Yeah.
And I dumped the ball over the second baseman's head and knocked him out of the game. Ugh. And I can tell you, I have never felt as bad as I felt at that moment right there. It was so hard for me because he'd worked so hard to come back from injury. He was so good. And he tore his rotator and was never the same. And he worked and worked and worked. And to be back on a major league field and you're pulling so hard for him. And that was a tough moment for me. But, you know, it'll only be the seventh group of brothers to start a major league game against each other, something that we both look back at. I did make him sign the ball from the first hit I got. I have that with some baseballs I have. And we don't talk that much about facing each other and win and loss. We just signed down at the Cardinal charity, their winter warm up. And it's just fun because people come through and get a baseball signed by both of us. And well, I think it's really cool because family is so important to me and I'm so proud of him and his accomplishments and then how hard he had to work to get back and his perseverance. I learned a lot from him.
Just so people understand the company that you kept. You were the seventh to face off. The sixth was Ramon Martinez against Pedro Martinez. That's not bad company to be in.
That's pretty good. I had to try to hit both of those guys. They were hard to hit.
But just so that people understand that it is not the nature of you, the kindness of you, is this isn't just from retrospect. The next day in the newspaper or in the newspaper, you shared with the Belleville, Illinois News Democrat. And it said, it just kind of watching your brother in that game, it just kind of killed me watching it. I had to kind of regroup. He's my younger brother, and I'm his second biggest fan behind his wife. Yeah. It's gut-wrenching. It's like you can beat up your younger brother, but nobody else can.
That's right. Yeah. It was really hard. I think it made it hard because of everything, like I said, he had gone through. We faced each other, I had said, in Des Moines, where when he was in AAA, and I was on a rehab assignment. And I literally was at the end of the bench screaming, make a play for him. Come on. I mean, just catch the ball. Because they were, I think in the game in St. Louis, Sosa dropped a fly ball. I mean, that doesn't happen very often, right? Major league outfielders don't just drop balls. They don't miss them. And it was like a lot of things were going wrong for him. And I'm just, you know, people ask me, who's your favorite teammate of all times? And I'm like, man, I got to play with Tony Gwynn, Randy Johnson, A-Rod, Griffey, Edgar Martinez, McGuire, Willie McGee, Ozzie Smith, Pujols, Edmonds, Matt Williams, Jay Bell. I mean, I could keep going. I'm like, my brother. I love playing with my brother.
Yeah.
I didn't appreciate it as much when we play together because we have a job to do and you're so focused on that. But when you look back at the opportunity you said to be the seventh set of brothers to pitch against each other, I think it's happened once, maybe the Weavers start against each other.
Right. Right.
Either 8 or 9 is pretty cool. There's a long list of major league players. And
yeah, I think I would have been a major league player had I had a brother, but I'm an only child.
Andy, I looked on the website baseballegg.com and it says your greatest game was on July 3rd, 1994, when you were with San Diego against the Mets. As you can see in my background, I'm a big Mets fan. You went 9 innings, 1 hit, no earned runs, 1 walk, 13 strikeouts.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I think back. I remember that. And I want to be careful how I say this. I look back now at some of the things. I mean, I was 1993. So I was, no, 1994. I was, you know, 27 years old. And we had traded away some of our players and I didn't want to sign long term because San Diego was a little bit different back then as it is now where they're going out and signing guys. But I was just such a punk at times. And I said some things that were just be thankful for where you're at, right? I'm in a major league uniform. I'm doing what I love to do. And I remember after that game, I pitched so well and I hit a 3-run double in that game too. I gave up a ball over our center fielder's head. I remember Rico Bronya, who actually hit me pretty well, whether he was there in Philadelphia. But the game was over. I throw a shutout and a one-hitter and had a great game. And I was just, I think I said something like, I just don't even want to be here. Right? I mean, how can you say that? I look back at that and I'm like, that's just embarrassing. But hey, you know what? You live and learn. And if one of my kids said that, I'd have to say, come here, need to talk to you, right? But super fun. I seem to match up well against the Mets. It was fun for me. Shea Stadium was one of my favorite places to pitch. Just pitch well, and there's nothing better than facing Doc Gooden or Saber Hagen or Sid Fernandez, David Cone on a Friday, Saturday night.
Right.
And I had a privilege of pitching there in 2000 in the playoffs. And it was the only game we won out in the LCS. Right. But just to be in that stadium, there's something about New York. And looking back, I think if you would have told me you could play 1 year in New York, just one, you only have to play there 1 year, I'd have taken it. I'd say, great. Yeah. I don't think my wife would have taken it. But I just think just that atmosphere of super fun, it just supercharges you being there.
Nice.
So, well, the All-Star game in 1993 was not New York. You had an amazing group of opponents that you faced in that game. And our listeners can count the Hall of Famers that you faced that day. You started, it was not an auspicious beginning. Roberto Alomar took you long.
Teammate, former our teammate. Yeah.
And then Paul Molitor, Junior Griffey, Joe Carter,
former teammate,
John Olerud, Kirby Puckett, Cal Ripken, and Wade Boggs.
Yeah. That's a pretty tough group right there, I think.
You think?
Six Hall of Famers and two back-to-back world champion with Carter and Olerud. Yeah, it was pretty special. I remember running out to, you know, in Camden Yards, and it was new then. The bullpens were out in the outfield, so I'm jogging in, and Tommy Lasorda was there. He said, "Hey, man, don't typically root for you, but I am today." I mean, it was a very calming presence because we played the Dodgers a lot, so I knew him well. And he said, "Just have some fun." And it was hard to breathe. It was almost like it was my first major league start again. So much tension or whatever. And, you know, it's an exhibition game, but you want to do really well. And I guess to some degree, maybe Robbie hitting a home run calmed me down a little bit. But I gave up two hits to my two former teammates. Joe Carter got a broken bat hit, and Robbie. And, you know, I tell people it wasn't – I gave up a run and – couple hits, and but I struck out Griffey Jr. and Cal Ripken Jr. So
not bad.
And,
yeah,
you did well. There wasn't interleague, so you're facing these guys for the first time ever. So pretty cool.
You played.
By the way, real quick, this doesn't have anything to do with me, but that was a game where Randy Johnson threw the ball over John Kruk's head.
Oh, right.
Yes. You remember that?
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
And I had pitched already. And so I'd gone in ice. I'm coming out, and John Kruk was laughing and joking around about it. But when he got into the tunnel's kind of like a zigzag. And I was walking out, and he was screaming, cussing, and throwing his helmet and his bat. And I was lucky that I wasn't quite to the turn. So he laughed about it. But if I'm him, I'm thinking the same thing. You know, it's an all-star game. Number one, the guy's throwing 103 miles an hour. I don't want to get hit in the head, but I also don't want to get embarrassed. I mean, right? It's a tough matchup for a lefty. Yeah. So,
well, Randy Johnson was one of your teammates.
Right.
Edgar Martinez was one of your teammates.
Yes.
Junior Griffey was one of your teammates. Those were the three Hall of Famers from the Mariners. You had... with the Padres, Tony Gwynn,
right.
Robbie Alomar, and now adding to your resume, Fred McGriff.
McGriff, right.
And Trevor Hoffman.
Right.
And with the Cardinals, your manager, Tony La Russa, Dennis Eckersley, and soon Albert.
Right.
And perhaps Scott Rolen.
Wow.
And Ozzie Smith.
And Ozzie Smith.
Wow. Yeah. That's quite a lineup there.
Yeah. And then there were so many guys that were so, so good that won't make it, but that were, I mean, you watch these guys every day. One of my granddaughters was over, and my daughter was just playing the piano and looking for some music books, and she pulled out a folder, and it was Tony Gwynn Padre folder. And I'm looking at his numbers on the back of this folder. You know, it was like the back of a baseball card.
Yeah.
And I watched him for 6 years. And in 1994, he was hitting 394, I think, when we went on strike. And it was incredible because when you're hitting 394, it's hard for your average to go up.
Right.
And he was getting his average was just climbing and climbing. I mean, he was getting 2-3 hits a night. They just could not get him out. And I mean, he was just the sweetest guy, a great teammate, always willing to help. He was the analytics guy before there was the analytics guy. He had all the video and everything. And he was an assistant coach on the team. But watching him hit was just incredible, day in and day out, because you'd watch the other pitcher. And these are major league pitchers. They're not a group of nobodies, and they didn't have anything that could get him out. He was going to hit the ball somewhere, and usually he'd hit it pretty hard. And so what a privilege to watch that guy for 6 years. I learned a lot from him.
You mentioned that you've pitched in the postseason a few times. You had four different series, seven series in 4 different years. How is pitching in a postseason different from the regular season? Is it, do you prepare differently?
No, but it's a lot different. You know, usually the strike zone will tighten up, and I didn't really mind that. I mean, you should have to throw the ball across the plate for it to be a strike. I grew up throwing that way, so that didn't really bother me. But I think the exertion level, I didn't pitch great in the playoffs. I pitched fairly good most of the time and then had a few clunkers, but it's just high stress. I mean, super high stress. Probably the biggest, the most high stressed was I pitched game 5 in the division series for the Mariners against the Yankees. And it was, you know, we win, we go on. And I faced David Cohn, and it was an epic game with us winning in extra innings. But it's just different. Every pitch is magnified. There's so much exertion that it just takes a lot out of you. And so
tell us about facing Don Mattingly.
I had never faced Mattingly. This was before Interleague. And so the first time I faced him was game 2 in Yankee Stadium. And he was up, I think we were winning 2-0 maybe in the 5th, 6th inning maybe. And I got ahead or I was behind in the count. And I'm like, you know what? I never do this, but I'm going to give it a shot. Just try to take a little bit off my fastball. And he was out in front a little bit, but he just one-handed it and hit it out. And I've been around a lot of things in sports, and I tell people that may have been that's in my top 3 of things I've ever seen at a baseball field. The love and respect, because that was the only time he made the playoffs in his 13-year career. And we're both from Evansville, even though we're 8 years apart. You know, I grew up knowing of him and seeing him play on TV and stuff, and to have that opportunity to pitch against him, but then to see the Yankee fans and the love and admiration they had for him, there was like a 5-minute stop in the game. It was incredible. Just unbelievable. He just was beloved. And so then I face him in game 5, and he ended up hitting a double down the left field line off of me. And that was his last career hit. So he hit his last career home run off of me and the last career hit. And I'm thankful we won, but it's anytime we see each other, that typically will come up from him. But he had an amazing career, and just a phenomenal hitter. Just a phenomenal hitter. I mean, he could hit for power, but he also put the ball in play. He didn't strike out. He just was great at his craft.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who, sadly, his career ended too soon because of his back.
Yeah,
but I don't know. You would know better, but I always think that he should be in the Hall.
The criteria, if the criteria for pitchers is 300 games wins, that's not happening. There's no one winning 300. Guys aren't going to play that long. They just aren't. And so I think, you know, could the guys that are doing it today, could Mattingly have hit back 30 years ago, 40 years, you know, could he have hit? Well, of course. I mean, guys that can hit. And so I'm not going to ever be there. You know, I'm in the University of Evansville Hall of Fame. So I'm excited about that. I think that at some point you reward guys that were very good in their era, even if it's just a different era, right? It's just guys aren't going to play for 20 years. They're not, you know, most guys aren't going to get to 3,000 hits. I mean, you think guys don't even get 200 hits. And if they did, it's going to take 15 years of getting to, it just doesn't, guys aren't going to get there.
Very, very rare. Anymore.
So
very rare.
He was a great hitter.
Yeah. I remember he hit 8 home runs in 8 consecutive games. Right. You hit 8 home runs in your career.
Exactly. So it's kind of the same, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, okay. Wait a second. Before we dismiss this, you did have 2 hits in that inning against your brother.
Right.
You did hit 8 home runs, but from 1989 to 2002, I don't know whether you know this, you were 2nd in home runs by pitchers to Mike Hampton.
Well, yeah, he happened to hit 10 in 1 year.
Yeah.
In Arizona or in Colorado, but he could really hit.
He could.
And only Greg Maddux had more extra base hits than you did. He had 31, you had 29.
Okay.
Now here, though, is more power to you. Great. But let's talk. Yes. Yeah. Let's talk about you facing Greg Maddux at the plate, this Mr. Extra Base guy. It happens that he was 0-for-22 against you.
That doesn't surprise. I was going to say, I don't think he did very well against me.
No, he did not.
Okay. Well, that's good. He shouldn't, but.
And in the 1994 season, which you spoke about, you led the league in with 189 strikeouts, yeah, which was 18 more than Jose Rios and 33 more than Greg Maddux. How many do you think you would have? I mean, the 1994 season is a nightmare to all of us.
Yeah, I don't. I like striking guys out. Everybody does, but it's not. You know, would I rather get a ground ball or a fly out on the first or second pitch? Sure. My goal when I went out there was to throw 7+ innings and give us a chance to win. And for the most part, throughout my career, I was able to do that. By the way, did I have any hits off of Maddux or?
I don't know. I'll check.
You don't know. You'll have to check that. I mean,
I don't know. I was so elated to find the 0-for-22 with 12 strikeouts.
I will say this. There are guys that you just get them out. They might be really good and you just get them out. And they're guys that are like, they're not very good hitters and you just don't get them out. It's just something with the matchups. But I hear a lot, well, it was different when you played than it is today. You know, today with the strike zone, we had more on the edges or off the edges, but we knew what the strike zone was. Anything belt high, even at the belt, might have been a ball. So, you know, it was lower and sideways. Now they've turned it up in the rectangle just goes higher. You got to throw it across the plate. Well, I didn't mind throwing it across the plate. Felt like my stuff was good enough to do that. But I was a cross seam guy that could ride the ball up. And the problem was they were balls. So if they didn't swing at them up above the belt when you're trying to get them to chase, well, now those are strikes. So, you know, I'm thankful to get to 2,000 strikeouts. I think I'd have a better advantage today just with my repertoire and the fact that I could pitch up there.
But I
will say this just to clarify for the hitting, that I was 8 home runs. My proudest, I love hitting. I mean, that was lucky when you hit a home run, right? But I did get 3 Cy Young Award winners, which is pretty cool. Right.
Oh, you did?
Jose Lima won a Cy Young Award.
Kevin Brown.
And Kevin Brown. I don't know if Jose Rio did, but he was.
I think.
He might have. He was really good. Yeah. But I didn't give up any to the other pitcher. So I gave up 200, 300, 4, whatever number of home runs in my career, but 0 to the other. So I was +8. That's all I know.
There you go.
That's all I know.
By the way, you mentioned in passing 2,000 strikeouts, which should not be minimized. You are the only pitcher in the history of baseball to end his career with exactly 2,000 strikeouts. And that 2,000 strikeout came on the very last batter you faced in the majors, yeah, Ryan Christensen. Yeah. And it was a strike him out, throw him out, double play.
Yeah. I started that game. I'd had trouble with my knee, right knee. I was having issues with my back. I started that game and I needed 2. And that's a big deal. And it was also the last game of the season. So St. Louis always has big crowds, but it's the last day of the season. And if we won the game, we won the division. If we lost and Houston won, then we would be the wild card. And so the game mattered. And I struck him out to start the game. And I looked over at the bench. I'm like, I need one more. How hard can that be? I mean, I just need one more. And it was one out in the fifth inning. And I struck him out on a 3-2 slider. Matheny threw the guy out. And that was it. And I was going to, you know, I went, got on deck and my back, I was starting to have back spasms. And like I said, it was the last game of the year. And so I'm walking up to the plate and they put it up on the Jumbotron that was a milestone for me. 50,000 people stood up and clapped. And I literally started I started crying. I kind of put my head down because I was a fan of the Cardinals. Ozzie and Willie, Jack Clark, that group. And I got a chance to be teammates of them later. But I would go over in the 80s and watch games at Busch Stadium. And I was a fan in the upper deck. And so to have that happen to me was incredible. It was an incredible moment for me. And I'm just thankful that I got there. It sounds so much better than 1999. It's just one. It does. Yeah. But if it was 1528, it wouldn't be that a big a difference. No, but it would be a big difference getting to 2000.
Yeah. I'm thankful for that. And you said you knew you were retiring.
I did.
You said, I don't want to be the guy who stays too long.
Well, I'd gotten sent home. I had a horrible year in 2001. I'd had knee surgery after I faced the Mets in the playoffs in 2000. 2001, it just didn't work. It was just bad. They wanted to get me to retire. I said no. And I went back out in 2002, won a spot, and then just didn't pitch well. And then through a whole series of young guys not doing well, I called Walt Jockety and I said, hey, he was our GM. I said, you're paying me a lot of money. I said, you want me to rehab, get my arm back in shape and see what happens? No strings attached. I get it if you don't want to, but maybe I can help. And I'd feel better, at least given a shot. So I got my arm back into shape and I was down in Memphis on a rehab assignment and Daryl Kyle passed away.
Yeah.
And I knew there were a lot of things. I mean, I'm a man of faith, but there are also things that line up. I was wearing number 57 for Memphis. I'm like, this is the stupidest number ever created, right? And that was his number. We were pitching on the same day. So I knew I was going to take over for him. And I pitched the second half of the season. I started two or three games and we traded for Chuck Finley and I was in the bullpen, but they had already sent me home before. So I'm like, what the heck? I mean, it didn't matter, right? I've been sent home once. It's no big deal. And I was playing catch with Chuck Finley in the outfield. And I was talking to him about throwing a split finger. I'm like, hey, how do you hold that? Whatever. And we started playing catch with it in the outfield. And he's like, man, that looks pretty good. I said, well, if I ever get to pitch again, you did take my spot. But, you know, if I get to pitch again, maybe I'll give it a shot. And so I'm throwing a bullpen. Or somebody got hurt and Dave Duncan said, hey, you're going to start in Miami. I said, well, I got a new pitch. And I swear to you, I'm telling, he goes, you have a new pitch from the outfield. I go, yeah, I just came up with a new pitch. It's nasty. He goes, well, you can show me what it is, you know, tomorrow night when we throw our bullpen. So I throw it and he's like, oh, wow, that's pretty good. And so he said, throw it in the game. If you get a chance and it's not going to hurt you. So second inning in Miami, bases loaded, nobody's out. 2-0 count. And I'm standing on the mound. I shook my head like six times. And then Matheny put down the splitter. And I threw it. And the guy hit a soft – it didn't go down. It kind of ran in. Guy hit a soft liner to me. I doubled up a guy. Next pitch, splitter, ground ball. I'm out of the inning. He's like, what was that? I'm like, that was my new pitch. And the rest of the year, I threw that splitter. I could throw it. Strike the ball. I could make it go, you know, dive in, away. It was incredible. And you don't just come up with a devastating major league pitch in the outfield. But I really believe, well, otherwise everybody would, right? But I really believe the Lord gave that to me. I knew I wasn't going to play anymore. And I'm thankful that I was able to end. So when the season was over, I pitched really well, in the playoffs. And Walt Jockety said, hey, you know, I went down to the stadium. He's like, we'd like to sign you. I said, no, I just wanted to let you know I'm not playing. And Scott Boris was my agent for my entire career. And Walt, literally the first thing he said was, he goes, Boris told you to say that. I said, no, I called him. I said, I'm done. I said, I just want you to know for your planning, don't plan on, I'm just done. I know I'm done. You sent me home once. I forgave you, but oh, we're good. I mean, and I wanted it to end when it was good. I just did not want to hang on until they shoved me out the door. I knew what it felt like the first time, and I did not want that to happen again.
In your last 15 appearances, 14 starts, you allowed as many as 3 runs just once. Mm-hmm. You had a 1.87 ERA. And in your last six starts, there were six wins for the Cardinals. You went 2-0 with a 1.69 ERA.
Yeah.
And yeah, Chuck Finley, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I needed to send him Christmas cards for a while.
Yeah.
I tell people, you know, I was with the Cardinals in 01, and I'd been shoved out. I pitched terrible. But I watched our utility outfielder, Kerry Robinson, who was a really good outfielder, pinch runner, defender, pinch hit for Mark McGwire with the tying run on second base in game five of the division series and two outs. We don't score. We're down one. We don't score. The game's over. And Big Mac, Tony took him out. And I don't think at the time, Tony says, at the time, I wasn't really thinking about it. I was thinking about what gives us the best opportunity to win. And for the longest time, McGwire would have been the guy that gave us the best opportunity to win. But everybody goes, every player at some point goes through that. And I'd already gotten sent home, and it was so hard. And I wanted to be able to walk away and say, thanks for having me. I love it here. I'd love to be a part of the community, be a part of the organization, which I am. But I'm good with playing. And just see it so many times, and guys leave the game with a chip on the shoulder, and because you've gotten fired, and it's hard when you've been so good at something to be fired. It's super hard, and it's guys have a hard time dealing with that.
Yep, Andy, we really appreciate your time. I do want to ask you one or two more things. You are the director of the St. Louis Prospects Training Facility. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I have a youth baseball club. You know, travel ball is really big, and my boys played for the St. Louis Prospects when they were younger. And when my son Drew, who's 34 now, was getting out of baseball, he pitched four minor league seasons, three for the Cardinals and one for independent ball. When he was getting out of baseball, he was looking for something to do. And I thought, you know what? Why don't I take over? The guy that started it was a good friend of mine. And I'm like, I'll buy you out. And Drew and I will do this, and I'll be the figurehead. And then 2 years later, Drew gets a call from his college pitching coach who worked for the Pirates as a minor league pitching coordinator and said, I want you to work for me. I want you to be a pitching coach. And so then Drew was gone. And Drew this year is going to be one of their AAA coaches. Nice. So he's done exceptionally well. He loves it. And here I am with this baseball club 6-7 years later. So I enjoy it. I fill in for some lessons here and there for the pitching, not hitting, even though I had 8 home runs, right? We already talked about that. But it's just trying to have a positive influence on the kids. And then probably more so just to have we're in the community talking to parents about trying to enjoy the journey, help, you know, we're not trying to make big leaguers. Just trying to have, you know, their 12-year-old have a good summer and have fun and learn to play baseball in the right way and do things right. So it's been good.
Your love for the game is so obvious.
Yeah.
Your respect for the game is so obvious. Yeah. I've got one last question before your last question. I have two, but I want to know about you and Fred Bird.
Oh, so I tell people, I did a TV show with Fred Bird for 14 seasons, Cardinals Kids. Just a fun Saturday morning TV show. And we were the hosts, and obviously the mascot doesn't talk. So we would intro the show. We'd intro in and out of different stories. And I had a lot of fun. I tell people it's a long fall from pitching in against the Giants in a 2002 LCS game. And hanging out with Fred Bird and doing a TV show. But we had a super time. They still do the show. I told them, I need to retire. I mean, I've lost most of my hair. It's gray. I think we could get a younger guy to take over, which Brad Thompson's doing a great job. But this is when I thought, you know what? It might be about the time to close it down. We were shooting a show, and we did it at the stadium all the time.
This is with the Buck family. Am I correct?
What's that?
The Buck family?
Not Jack Buck's family. They're a different Buck family. They started. He was a TV guy here in St. Louis, and he thought it would be fun. And so we're shooting the show at the stadium, and it was the day after the All-Star game, and or maybe the second day after, and we're in the visiting dugout because we intro. And so Fred Bird and I were having a little picnic, right? We had our little red and white checkered, I mean, it's just goofy stuff, right? And we're going through and having our little discussion. They're filming it, and Don Mattingly walks up into the dugout because the Cardinals were playing the Marlins. And he just looked at me and said, hey, Donnie, what's up? And then, you know, we had to stop and we had to start over. So we start over and we're doing our thing. And here comes Barry Bonds because he was their hitting coach. And he looked at me and he just started shaking. I said, don't ask. And then the last guy that walked up, we had to start over. And here comes Giancarlo Stanton. And he just kind of looked at me, shook his head, kept walking. And so we had those things all the time. You know, we'd have some of the Cardinal players that would come and do like a tip for the kids. Hey, here's how you catch the ball. Here's, you know, put your glove here, all this stuff. And but it was just a fun TV show. And I really liked it. I had a lot of fun with it. And I said, I tell people, I had to remind people I actually played. They're like, did you play or you used to do a TV show? I said, no, I actually played.
Do you tell people about how you used to bake cookies?
That's right. That's exactly right. We talked about everything. We did just about everything on that show. But yeah, I've been on a, yeah, we were on a cooking show one time with my daughters. We baking cookies. And I mean, Venice family's done it all, right?
I think
at least
so.
We've tried. At least we've tried.
And my now you could add this podcast to
yes,
your resume.
Exactly. Exactly. And my last question before we let you go, and again, thank you for your time. This is Baseball and BBQ. You're in St. Louis. How's the barbecue? Do you have a favorite barbecue joint you go to?
I actually, my favorite barbecue is what I make.
Oh.
I've got a big green egg, and so I do eggs. I do the pulled pork, nice. Brisket. There are a lot of, I mean, there's some really good barbecue places. We just usually win because we have like 20 people at our house when we eat, so I enjoy doing it. So how's nice. That? I know Pappy would always bring stuff down to the ballpark. Wainwright, I think, is if he could pitch or open up his own barbecue place, it'd probably be a toss up. But
you know who also has a big green egg is Howard Johnson.
Yeah,
he's a big green egg.
Yeah, person, I love so. It. I love smoking stuff on there, and yeah, when you have a big family, you have a lot to eat. It's a good deal.
Well, beautiful. Thank you so much for your time, Andy. This has been really fantastic. I really appreciate it. And
thank you. I hope you had as close to as good a time as we did. Yes. I'm telling you, this was so much fun. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. I don't really honestly think about baseball a whole lot. I think, I mean, with kids and grandkids and their schedules, and had the privilege of doing Christian speaking and being around kids, and so I don't really think a whole lot about it, but it's always fun to bring back memories, and I'm glad you sparked my memory on a few things. It was super fun.
Thank you so much, Andy Holcomb.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast, and if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Lynn. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
And we want to thank Andy Bennis, and I want to thank Bill Chuck for joining me on that interview. Leonard, you tell me, how did it sound like from a fan's point of view?
Jeff, I guess I'm not needed. Or, wow. No, come on. I mean, listen, Bill Chuck and you make a great team. Okay. You and I make a great team. But I'm going to say Bill Chuck filled in quite admirably. Really, really good. I love what Bill brings to an interview. The research that he does. He reminds me of Doug.
Yeah.
You know, how Doug Scheiding will interview. Mm-hmm. I mean, research. Right. They're very similar in that respect. And it's great. I mean, the stats that Bill brings up and the interesting tidbits, it's just great. So
yeah,
nice interview. You know, Jeff, we were talking about the World Baseball Classic, and we didn't tell people how they can get in touch with us and give their opinions. Can you, sure, can you please do that?
I can do that. You can give us a call, leave a message at 516-855-8214. Send us an email, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page, Baseball and BBQ. You can leave a comment on our Twitter page.
Tweet.
At Baseball and BBQ. Instagram, Baseball and Barbecue with Barbecues, all spelled out. We do have a website, www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Please rate, review, subscribe, follow, tell your friends.
Tell them all. And as I sometimes say, if you don't like the episode, tell your enemies. And here's something that everybody should know. Go to baseballbbq.com. Grilling tools and accessories. Guys, have you looked at that site? Baseball bat handles. That is, it's great. They're tongs. They take a baseball bat handle, they split it, and that's the handle for the tong. And then they even have the little piece that you pull so they stay. I mean, these things are made incredibly well. Jeff, you've been using yours since you got them, and they're in great shape, right?
I love them.
Yeah. And it's not like you treat them, you know, so gingerly. You use them.
I use them.
Force. And they do great. And they're the only tools you use, right?
Absolutely.
So we recommend that you go there. And we also recommend that you go to the Pandemic Baseball Book Club. You've heard so many of the authors on this show. We're going to have many more coming on. They do so much research. They put their hearts and souls into these books. And all we ask is that you go to their website and maybe buy the books there, buy some of their swag. So baseballbbq.com, the Pandemic Baseball Book Club, two great, great websites, great people. And speaking of great people, Jeff, see, the one thing I think that I bring to this show is I can do a damn good segue. Man. So now back to good people. Galen Powell, you did some research. I love how you come up with people. And you researched, you found him, and I'm glad you did, because I think everyone's really going to enjoy this interview with Galen Powell of Old Grunt Barbecue.
Leonard and I have both had on barbecue experts, writers, bloggers, barbecue world champions, and restaurateurs. Today we have an Army veteran who is now competing on the barbecue circuit and hopes to start his own barbecue trailer. He is starting a barbecue catering business and is a Thermo Pro ambassador. From the Razorback State of Arkansas, please welcome Galen Powell of Old Grunt BBQ. Welcome, Galen.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
We're good.
How are you? Good.
Man, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So, pleasure.
Arkansas. Jeff, you have family in Arkansas.
I do. My brother is in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Where at?
Yeah, he's in Marmel, Arkansas.
Marmel? Yeah, that's about 35, 40 minutes from where I live.
Oh, right. He's not at the good of barbecue, though, so.
Well, not everybody can be.
And also, he's an Air Force veteran. And so, Galen, thank you for your service and your Army veteran.
Not a problem. It was more of a career to me.
Oh, okay. How long were you in the Army?
Well, it was a job. I was in there 3 years before I got hurt, and I was medically discharged.
Oh, okay. Well, we do thank you. I know it's a sacrifice, so thank you. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us, why get into the barbecue competition circuit?
Well, you know, I started out doing little, small-time contests as a judge. You know, I'm not KCBS certified or whatever, but you know, just as they needed someone to step in and judge. So I was like, crap, free barbecue. Why not? You know, I got free drinks and free barbecue. So I was like, crap, I didn't even have to pay to get in. Let's go. And I did that for a couple of years. And then after tasting some of it, you know, I'm like, man, I've done this for 15, almost 20 years now. I got to be able to do, at least do something close to comparable to this. And that's kind of how I got started. It just, the bug bit me and I fell head over heels into it.
As far as barbecuing, then, did, when you were growing up, was that a part of your upbringing?
Well, somewhat. You know, my dad would always cook on the smoker, you know, the grill, whether it be, you know, pork or beef brisket or, you know, wild game, you know, hog, you know, wild hogs that we got, or be, you know, deer or whatever. That's always been somewhat in my, I guess you might call it my barbecue lineage. It's all been there. So I'm just building on what I've already started.
Okay.
Or gave, you know, through the years.
So Galen, I have a, when you were in the military, so where were you stationed? Like where?
Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
The whole time?
Yes, sir. You know, the group I was with the 1st and 77th Field Artillery, and we did several things, you know, like warfighter down in Fort Hood, or we would go train ROTC cadets in Washington, you know, just different things. I would always try to get as many things as I could to get, you know, to get experience on everything, whatever I could get. And I think that's carried well over to my barbecue side. I try to do as many different things as I can possibly do to get the best, more rounded effect.
Well, what I was going to ask you is when you were stationed, did you guys, in your free time, did you barbecue at all?
Sometimes. There wasn't a whole lot of free time. Because gotcha. Back then I had little kids, so I didn't have a whole lot of free time.
Okay.
So okay. Galen, so as you're competing, you must have, maybe you don't have, but how many smokers or grills or pellet grills do you have?
Well, right now I've got an offset smoker that I normally use. Matter of fact, the very first competition that I competed in, I cooked every single category on this offset.
Okay.
I won second place with ribs with it.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Now I own that smoker, a Pro 34 Traeger pellet grill. Of course, I have the old standby gas grill that mm-hmm. I very rarely use. I barely don't even hardly ever pull the cover off of it. And then we're about to set forth into making another. We're going to make a trailer smoker for competitions. Because right now I'm kind of deciding on how big I want it. That way I can kind of, I guess I have a dual chamber is what I'm trying to do, where I can have it two separate temperatures and I can cook a lot more meat on there than what I could with my other stuff.
Sure.
So are ribs your specialty then?
Yes, sir. But I'm pretty good at anything pork. I got second in ribs, and the next year I got third in pork.
Nice.
Out of how many teams was that?
Well, I was in the amateur or the backyard division then, and that was like 29.
Impressive.
Yeah, that is.
And then, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, because, you know, I was in a competition and I placed third. There were only two teams, though. So, you know.
Right. It is what it is. When since then we've went on, we've done I think it's BCA, I think is what it is, Barbecue Cooks Association. I think, I can't remember what it is. They had a Founders Day in Whitehall, Arkansas. We did that one. We were, as far as I know, the only backyard team there. We didn't do as well as what we thought we should have, but I did what I normally do for a KCBS event.
Mm-hmm.
And I can now see where I messed up. And then the last one I done last year was Smoke on the Water in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. And we, once again, were the only backyard team competing against 39 professional or 38 professional teams. I was about middle pack for most of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's I got the best out of what I could get, and I got a learning experience from it to boot. So, you know, I've got nothing but good things to say.
Sure. Experience and you get better and better. That's great. So yes. So you said ribs is your specialty. St. Louis,
yes.
Baby back, any particular type?
Well, if I'm going to just eat at home, I really love the baby backs because there's more meat to me.
Okay.
They're a little more tender. If I'm going for show, I'll go St. Louis.
Galen, how far do you venture from home for a competition? What's the furthest that you've ventured?
A few hours, probably 3 hours so far. I mean, I've planned to go. There's a few in Texas later in the year. I'm planning on trying to go to them, and they're right at 7.5-8 hours away.
Oh yeah. So you want to make barbecue your career then?
Yes.
Do you right now have a the barbecue business? Are you doing catering or something?
Well, I do around locally. You know, I'm not, you know, huge by any means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, family, friends, you know, associates, they'll call and ask me for it. And of course, I'll, you know, be happy to do it for them.
So Galen, I see on your Facebook page, though, you are preparing for Sunday's Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And you are, you know, you're going to cater. I guess you're taking orders for catering.
Yes. Yeah. So if anybody that way, because I'm already going to cook.
Right.
So they know once I put that on there, I'm already cooking.
Uh-huh.
So if you want something, you tell me by a certain day, I'll have it on there. You come and pick it up, or I'll deliver it to you for a fee.
All right. the Super Bowl party caterer. There you go.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
So Jeff, you're going to order from Galen?
I don't know if he's going to deliver this far, though.
Oh, no, that's a long trip, bro.
Well, I mean, he'd charge the delivery fee might outweigh the cost of the meat. But
you think?
I think it might be worth it, though. He's very good.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Galen, it says on your Instagram page, which, by the way, is Old Grunt BBQ. First, let me ask you this. How did you come up with Old Grunt BBQ?
Well, I was putting it out there from one of my friends who's also an Army veteran. He was a sniper. And I said, man, what do I call this? I said, I want to keep it Army-based because everything I do is, you know, military-based. Because, like I said, I make duck calls and different things. But that company, Steel Rain, which is my MLRS unit's, I guess, a tagline, I guess you'd call it, or motto. So I wanted to kind of keep something kind of military based. And he said, don't take this wrong, but you're old and you're in the Army, so Old Grunt. I said, okay, that sounds like a plan there, but I like that.
That's as good a name as anything, you know? It's a great way to come up with a name, yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of have something in common with Jeff because anyone who listens to our show knows that he has numerous nicknames, but one is Old Coot.
Yes. Exactly. So I was looking on your Instagram page and it says you were an ambassador for ThermoPro. So how did you get involved with them?
Well, you know, it's kind of crazy. I was really just doing, I forgot what you call that stuff.
Reviewing?
Whatever it was. I messaged them because I had used their stuff, you know, in the competitions. And I was like, you know, hey, what do I have to do to get in with you guys since I'm already using all your stuff anyway in my competitions at home? I was like, I want to be as legal as possible and get as close in with everybody as I can, you know. They said, well, you go online, you fill out the application to be an ambassador. We approve you. And they give me like this little code, you know, to put in all my posts and everything else for somebody wants to buy, you know, say they want to buy a ThermoPro, the Wi-Fi probe.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the name of it is. They want to buy that. They get so much off of it. You know, that's basically how all that started. It's nothing real spectacular.
I tell you, using a thermometer changed the way I cook. As soon as I started using a thermometer, you know, it just changed the way, you know, meat, everything tasted.
Oh, yeah. And see, the thing about it is, what a lot of people don't understand, you know, I use an instant read more than I do anything. You know, especially when I cook my briskets, they'll be like, well, I got it to this temperature. I said, well, how did you do it? Did you do it to where, did you just do it to 203, 205 and then pull it? Or did you do it to probe tenderness to where you put it in there, it slid in like butter? You know, that to me is the most integral part, well, just as well as seasoning, you know, mm-hmm. as far as briskets go for me.
You know, what's nice is you don't see a lot of the where you push down on the meat and then they take the thumb and the index finger and they go in between and like, oh, it should feel like this. You don't see that a lot anymore. You know,
I don't like the whole squishing of the meat. To me, you're squishing out all your juice.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just old school, I guess.
Well, no, actually, I think you're new school, because it used to be that's how people used to cook. And then they'd cut open the meat to see if it was done. And they'd.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, as far as, you know, how you see now, like on TikTok and all that other stuff, they come out and they just press down as hard as they can.
Oh, yeah. To show you.
I was growing up not to do all that stuff.
Right.
You know, you cut it open, you see the juice coming out.
Yeah.
Slap you another one off and let it roll.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
And also the days of, you know, taking chicken off and cutting it open and just it's pink inside. Those days are avoided. They're done. Those should not happen anymore.
That should never happen with like my instant read. I'm within a fraction of a second, I know exactly how hot it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, are you, when you are cooking your ribs, and not the ribs, brisket more, are we a foil wrap, a butcher paper wrap? Give us a few of your secrets.
To be honest, I've tried it all the ways. I've tried it butcher paper, double wrapped with butcher paper. I've tried it foil boats. I've tried it maximum wrap full foil. To be honest, like in competitions, my best bark and to me, my best brisket turn in was the foil boat. It turned out the juiciest. They had the best bark. I mean, I've never cooked anything other than, you know, that great. But as far as taste, that was the best one of all. But like when I do it at home, I'll just wrap it in, you know, the butcher paper, but just because I can put it on my Traeger, wrap it in double and go on about my business.
Without giving away any secrets, do you use a special rub or anything you use on your meats, or is it like a?
I use all my own stuff.
Your own stuff, great.
The only thing I don't use of mine is my competition chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I get that from Fire Dancer, but I use every now and then I might sprinkle like some, you know, some black and tan on my brisket just to give it a different bark, because you get that black Himalayan salt, and it kind of helps with a little crust. But other than that, it's my own pork rub, my own rib rub, everything.
Nice. You know, I'm looking at your Twitter page, and you have a picture of the header. Is that your barbecue team? And I would venture to say it's your family.
That is my brother from another mother.
Oh, okay.
Which one is it?
It's one with you all in gray shirts. I'd smoke that. And there's a guy behind you in a green shirt.
That's my family.
Okay, that's your family.
From the trophy.
Well, see, are they part of the team, or are they just did a cheer? Oh, they are part of the team. Great.
Yeah.
Family affair. That's what we like.
Oh, yeah. They help all along the way, from the very beginning to picking the meat out, turning it in. Each one of them has a different job.
Great.
Galen, are you a fan of any of the barbecue shows?
Oh, yeah. I love some Malcolm Reed, man.
Okay. So so Malcolm...
Right. That's one reason why I started doing the comp thing. Him and Heath, I started watching them, and I'm like, man, I need to be just like those two dudes, man. They're cool. You know, they can cook anything they wanted to cook, anytime they wanted to cook it. So I'm like, I got to figure this out.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, barbecue, we all feel like I cannot, I watch some of these cooking shows. I just watched the British Baking Show for the first time. And they make these, I'm like, how do they do that? And I have no clue. And yet I feel like I watch one of these barbecue shows and I have a chance.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's ironic you say that. That's about all I watch is the Food Channel. And then that's like, a lot of people say that's pathetic, but I mean, I get a lot of ideas, you know, for doing different things from there. That's what, you know, I do different desserts. I try on my Traeger, all kinds of stuff.
So are you, if I said to you, would you ever want to be on one of those shows? Like with the timing, you know, you will have, you know, you have 3 hours to make a 12-pound brisket. You know, all those.
Well, it's kind of funny you bring that up. I originally was planning on, back before the show hadn't got canceled, as the Guy Fieri's grocery games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had sent my application in for that.
Oh, okay. And what happened?
I haven't heard anything because, as far as I know, I heard the show got canceled. So.
Oh, okay. So I got you. Yeah. Well, there are so many of these other shows, you know.
Oh,
yeah. Right.
I would love to be on any one of them just for the opportunity.
Oh, well, you never know, right?
Yep. You know, I'm going back to your Twitter page. I'm going through some of your timeline here, and I do see the competition rub that you use. I mean, you say it's own rub. That's fantastic. And I think I saw on your Facebook page a jar of your own sauce.
I make five types of sauce. Actually, no, I make six now.
Nice.
I've got two different types of Kansas City sauce. One regular, one is alcohol based. I make a Memphis, and actually, I've made a fusion, which I call my Arkansas sauce. It's a fusion of Kansas City and Memphis, and I make a mustard sauce and two different versions of Carolina sauce.
Any plans to mass market it, or is this just for you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Great.
As soon as I can find the place. I've been looking around and trying to figure out what would be the best fit for me and my family during this venture.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still searching, but we're probably going to go with Townsend for our rubs. And I'm still trying to figure out who I want to bottle the barbecue sauce.
Oh, so Jeff, we actually caught him at the beginning of who knows what could become.
Exactly. I hope a long, long career.
So Galen, what type of barbecue then is your favorite?
I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm a chopped brisket dude, or a brisket sandwich. You give me like a Kaiser bun, some Duke's mayo, quarter inch slab cut brisket, some crisp pickles, some purple onion, I'm good to go.
Okay. Duke. So now I had heard about Duke's mayo. Let's talk a little. Jeff, we're going to change direction a little bit. We're going to head towards the mayo. So being from New York, and the mayo of choice here has always been Hellmann's, right? It's always, and once I got into barbecue and the internet, and I saw Duke's. And eventually I did purchase Duke's mayo. Am I crazy? I didn't find it to be so different.
Well, to me, it's all about taste to me.
Yeah.
I cannot stand Hellmann's.
Oh, okay.
It has a wang to me. But as far as like going to brisket, it's got to have Duke's for me. Or I've got to make some kind of remoulade sauce to put on the bun and, you know, maybe with a touch of hot sauce just to kind of give it a kick.
So you definitely find there is a big difference between Duke's and Hellmann's.
It's all about taste, like I said, to me. I've just never, you know, growing up, my mom and them had Hellmann's and my grandma had Hellmann's. I'm like, man, I just don't like this stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Galen, before I let you go, and we appreciate the time that you've taken to speak with us. Besides pork and chicken and the normal barbecue fare, ever cook anything on a barbecue off the beaten path, like, I don't know, duck or lamb or...
Oh, you want him to say gator.
I want him to say gator, yes.
That's right. That's what you want.
I'm trying to come up with that because that is going to be one of the next things that I do on my Roku channel. I've got to find one and source it here locally so I don't have to drive to Louisiana to pick it up.
Right.
That's what I really want to try to do because I've seen so many people do it, you know, get up like a 40 or 50 pound one, skinned out, wrap that joker in bacon, stuff it with boudin, roll it. But yeah, that's something that I'm really looking into doing.
Cool.
And Jeff, would you sample that if he cooked that?
Sure.
Yes, you're more adventurous than me. I
something off the beaten path. You know, I cook ducks on my smoker, geese, wild hog, deer.
Okay.
Even done. We were given some bison here a while back. I mean, that was pretty good. It was different.
You see, we don't have that around here. The bison and the deer.
Well, see, we were given that to somebody who made a trip.
Ah.
And they got it when they were up north.
Gotcha.
Well, Jeff, you actually had, didn't you have rattlesnake at one time?
I did.
Yeah. You ever have that, Galen? You ever eat rattlesnake?
No, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm deathly scared of snakes. So I can't even imagine putting my mouth on one that's dead.
I tell you what, Galen, it tasted like chicken.
Really? Everything tastes like chicken.
Yeah. Which is why we should just eat chicken.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Galen, you mentioned you said your Roku channel.
Yes.
Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, a lady, she had been with Discovery. They were starting their show around about the time COVID hit, and which they canceled their production or whatever. Long story short, she got to their own channel started with Roku somehow. And she's been reaching out to everybody, and she's got several different people, you know, whether it be live fire cooking, barbecue, whatever, to be part of these channels. Well, I ended up getting my own channel, and I'm able to add to episodes to it as I, you know, because I work all the time, whether it be barbecue, whether it be my other job, my part-time job, whatever. And I'm able to add to it as I can. And I just send her, once I get done with videos, I send her the videos and she uploads them and puts the commercials and everything else in them.
And how can other people see this?
Yes, sir. It's the channel is called Oh Grunt Barbecue and More.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I said it was going to sound something like a YouTube thing because I don't have Roku. So,
Well, and see, I'm going to start a YouTube channel as well.
Oh, cool. Good.
I've actually already got one, but it's under my duck call thing. So I've got to redact all that stuff out of my duck call channel and just open a straight barbecue one. And what I was going to do, the reason I put Old Grunt Barbecue and More, what I was going to do, I was going to do like some hunting, you know, and then taking that from going hunting to cleaning to cooking to eating. You know, basically like farm to table.
Yep.
But field to table.
Galen, are you a bow hunter? What?
Yes, sir.
I would imagine the hunting is pretty good where you are.
It's pretty good. I can't complain. Yeah. I'm able to do it, you know, a lot more than I'm blessed.
Yeah. Well, you hunt and then you can cook what you hunt.
Yes, sir. I love this deer backstrap.
Yeah. Well, Galen, we like I said, appreciate the time you've taken with us. We wish you best luck in all your competitions and your ventures. Now, before we let you go, why don't you plug your social media? I know you have a Twitter and Facebook. Anything else?
Instagram, it's Old Grunt Barbecue. If they want to hit me up on there, or they can go to my personal page, it's Galen Powell. I'm just whatever. I'm good. Basically, everything is Old Grunt Barbecue.
Gotcha. And you're also on TikTok, right?
Yes, sir. It's Bucks, Ducks, and Barbecue.
Bucks, Ducks, and Barbecue. Gotcha.
Yes, sir.
Well, Galen, again, thank you for taking the time. It was really a pleasure meeting you virtually.
Thank you.
And we wish you the best of luck on your competitions.
I appreciate it. Thank you all very much for having me.
Thank you very much, Galen Powell. I really think that you are the future of barbecue. He is. He has a love for it. He's good at it. And I have a feeling that we're going to be hearing a lot from Galen Powell in the future. We're going to look back and we're going to say, boy, it's a good thing we had Galen Powell when we did, because if we try to have him now, you know, in the future, he probably would be like, baseball and BBQ, who?
Right.
Anyway. I want to tell everyone, we are brought to you by Bet Online. It is where the game starts. But Jeff, we're not starting.
No.
We're ending.
That's right.
We are ending this episode, and it's episode 172. And it's over.
Yeah, but you know what? The next episode, I think the pitchers and catchers will be in camp.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. And Jeff, so then we can end this episode, because the sooner we end this episode, the quicker we get to pitchers and catchers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If we don't end this, pitchers and catchers can never report. It's a weird thing. All right. See, you missed that too, didn't you?
Yes.
How do we end the episode, Jeff?
With the poet.
Phil Krakowski.
And the musician.
Dave Dresser.
And the song.
Baseball always brings you home.
All right. We will see you next time on Baseball and BBQ.